Welcome, virtual entrepreneurs, millennials on the go, and adventure seekers with big dreams. You found the right place. My name is Alexis Teichmiller, a millennial, lifestyle blogger, and digital creative. The Laptop Lifestyle is designed to inspire, educate, and challenge you to live the life you want every day. Together, let's unlock how to live the laptop lifestyle to the fullest. Hey there, Laptop Lifestylers. It is your host, Alexis Teichmiller here, and today I am bringing on a very special guest who is going to help you learn how to follow your fears. Her name is Julie Solomon. Julie is a New York Times best-selling publicist, brand manager, and blogger. She's worked with firms like Thomas Nelson, Press Here Publicity, and Abingdon Press. Her work at Thomas Nelson Publishers included publicity efforts on the record-breaking book Heaven Is For Real, which has sold over 10 million copies worldwide. Julie co-founded OMG Publicity, which began her entrepreneurial career. The company focuses on managing publicity campaigns for authors, bloggers, entrepreneurs, and creative new product launches. OMG Publicity was soon able to gain renowned clients including Devon Franklin, Megan Good, Emily Maynard, Max Licato, Simon & Schuster, HarperCollins Publishing, and others to manage the growth of their brands. In this episode, you will learn how to make smart transitions in life and business, how to follow and grow from your fears, the importance of self-awareness and how you can use it to help identify your strengths and weaknesses, and the secret behind building long-term influence. This is an action-packed episode, and I promise it's one you will listen to all the way through. If you like it, share it with your friends on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or leave a review on iTunes. I would love to hear from you and see what your biggest takeaway from this episode was. Okay, y'all, let's get to it. Julie, I am so excited to have you on the show today. After watching your YouTube videos and reading your blog for a while now, I know you are a small town girl that moved to a big city to chase fearlessly after her dreams. Can you share that journey with us?
Sure. Yeah. So I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee, and originally had grown up in an even smaller town outside of Nashville, Tennessee called McMinnville, Tennessee, but moved to Nashville when I was seven and went to high school in Nashville, went to college at the University of Tennessee in Knoxville. And after that, I decided to move to New York City 2 weeks after graduating college. I had only been there one time. It had been a couple of months prior to that. I went to New York on a journalism and communications trip with my university. I majored in communications and PR and journalism. So we did a New York trip and I fell in love with the city just a few months prior to graduating college and knew that that's really where I was being called to go. And so kind of packed up my bags and moved there with no job and no place to live and no friends. So that was kind of an interesting summer, but it was so fun. I just kind of hit the ground running, trying to meet as many people as possible. I did know, you know, I think at the time I knew like one or two people well enough to consider them, you know, friends, and we would go and do things kind of socially, which allowed for a lot of great networking. And then I really just hit the ground running, with just applying to jobs and, had finally landed, had done some stuff, kind of random things, more like paid internships and things like that throughout the summer, but was finally able to kind of land a big girl job August of that year. So after kind of spending the summer in the city, and that was Press Here Publicity. And so at the time, my first job coming out of college really was assisting under a fantastic woman and just an office of fantastic women who they were and still are a boutique agency, but represent a lot of really big music clients. And so I was coming right out of college, being able to work on projects and campaigns that surrounded, you know, talents like Lenny Kravitz and the White Stripes and Pink and Maroon 5 and just a lot of really kind of cool and fantastic, you know, artists. And so that really helped me and propelled me into that first year in New York. And I really did just kind of hit the ground running and, you know, your typical kind of New York PR job experience. You know, you're in the office 12 hours a day, and then after that, you're going to events and you're going to shows, and it was a lot of work, but it was a lot of fun, and it was a wealth of knowledge, and I so appreciate that time of my life and that experience, and I definitely learned more in that year than I think I could have learned 5 years, you know, really anywhere else. That's kind of the New York hustle and the mentality of that city and being there. So that was really cool. And really kind of navigating the hustle of finding a job, because I know that that's something that a lot of millennials, especially when they're coming out of college, really struggle to do, you know, and how do you really, you know, even get your foot in the door to get that kind of interview and to get that kind of job. So going through that and experiencing that was really interesting as well.
And also finding ways to separate yourself from everyone else that's in the job market or trying to find a job. So it's a matter of separating yourself from the pack. And it sounds like you moved to New York first, which is really smart because it's hard to get your first job out of college across the country without living there first. So what was the process of making yourself stand out to land that first job?
Yeah, so one of the things that I took away from my schooling and college is I had remembered that there was a class that we were learning, I think, how to write a press release. And I remembered that on every press release, you know, the content's going to change, obviously, but the structure of a press release is always the same. You know, you've got the date, you've got the location of where the press release is coming from, some servicing, you know, information. And then at the bottom or at the top, depending on the formatting wise where they want to put it, you always have a contact information. So I knew that it was really, especially at that time, because we're talking 2007. So we're talking pretty much 10 years ago at this point. It was harder to kind of Google and find people. Facebook had just started 2 years before that. I think Twitter had maybe just started. Instagram didn't even exist yet. So it wasn't as easy / saturated as it is now to really find contacts. I don't even think LinkedIn, I mean, LinkedIn was there. I just don't think that it was used to the way that it is used now. So, but there was Google. So what I did, I remembered Googling a part of the press release. There's a phrase that's in every press release that ever goes out to any newswire, and it says for immediate release. And what that basically is telling the media is that the information that you're about to read on this press release is for immediate release to the public. So they can essentially take that information and share it out. So I knew that if I wrote out for immediate release, and then I also, you know, maybe wrote in, you know, an artist name like a Lenny Kravitz, for example, hopefully, fingers crossed, I could find a contact, you know, some kind of press release would pop up on Google with a contact information. So that was kind of the way in which my brain at the time thought to do that. So I literally, Googled for immediate release. And then I went to Billboard's top 200 at the time because I knew that I wanted to get into music PR. And so I tried to look to see who were the top artists on the radio at that time because I knew that their press releases would be pretty recent and relevant. So I would do for immediate release, Katy Perry, for immediate release, you know, I don't even think Lady Gaga was there at the time, but you know, whoever was on the Nickelback or whoever was on the radio at the time, I would do that in hopes of finding a contact. And then I was able to do that. And I also did it, I think, with some talent as well, because I was able to, from that, get interviews, not only with some music, boutique PR firms, but with also some really big, TV and film PR firms. So I think I might've out of the, you know, 50 that I sent out, I think I might've gotten like a handful of responses. And then from that, you know, went on those interviews. And then from that, I got two job offers. And one was with a company called 42 West, which is a big TV and film PR firm. And it was going to be assisting one of their, top publicists. I think she repped like Nicole Kidman or something. She was a big wig. Or it was going and working at Pressier Publicity and assisting under Carlene Donovan, who that's the job I ended up taking because it was music. And that's what really I was feeling more passionate about and more called to do at the time. So that's the job that I took. And it was fantastic. And that's how, you know, I landed that. And I think that once just getting in there and interviewing with them, you know, they knew that I had moved there. Like you said earlier, you know, even if you're not living in a city that you're trying to get a job, it's probably best. These were kind of one of the situations that I would tell someone to maybe lie for the sake of, because that was something that I was doing even, you know, I would, you know, send resumes to New York prior to moving there. But the second that they would see that my address was Tennessee, you know, I wouldn't get any kind of response. So they knew that I was serious because I had moved there. You know, they knew that I was ready to work and that I was eager to do it. And, you know, I got the job.
That's incredible. I love that story of persistence and resilience and your will to just make that happen. You use this phrase in your branding called follow your fear. And I think that's really interesting because a lot of people say follow your passion or follow your dreams, but you have this really unique outlook on following your fear. Will you share that outlook and kind of how you've used that as a guiding force in your life?
Of course, yeah. So when it comes to, you know, fear, I think that so many of us see fear as this kind of handicapped way of keeping us, you know, afraid and scared and you know, really from achieving what we're supposed to be doing. And I think that not only can people have fear of failure, but I think a lot of times people can have fear of success even, you know, because whether you're failing or whether you're succeeding, you're striving for something that you potentially have never done before. So it's really just the unknown of both of those things can be very hindering and just a very vulnerable and scary thing, which as, you know, human beings, that's just the thought of being vulnerable sometimes is fear in itself. So I've always been a huge proponent of following your fear. And even if you consciously or subconsciously don't even know that it's what you're fearful of, and it just, at least in my experience, you know, I'm sure that there was a part of me that was completely terrified to move to New York City. There was a part of me that was scared to death to write those emails and send my resumes out. But it was following those things that really allowed me to then achieve my dreams. And looking back, you know, I'm 32 now. So I guess looking back at the past decade of my career thus far, every time that I have truly followed my fear, I have grown and something super positive and super successful has come from it. Whenever I haven't followed my fear, I have gotten very complacent, very stagnant, and just not really kind of miss those growth opportunities that I think that, you know, God or the universe or, you know, however, which a person may believe were trying to present to me at that time. So I'm a huge proponent in seeing fear as just the world's way or God's way of kind of winking at you to follow it and to come this way. Because I think that the more that you follow your fear, the more that you're going to be doing yourself a service. And I really feel that when people don't follow their fears and just allow for the fear to kind of overcome them and then allow this complacency, if you will, they're really doing, you know, a disservice not only to themselves, but to the people who need their gifts the most. And you're kind of essentially stealing from others when you're not giving them those gifts.
Yes, girl. When you really allow yourself to follow your fears, incredible personal growth can come from that. I totally agree. I always say sometimes the best things happen when you are uncomfortable and you're pushing yourself outside of what you think you're capable of, and you can really surprise yourself. But of course, that's easier said than done. So what do you think keeps people from following their fears and tapping into their true potential?
Well, I think that where that comes, as great as the gifts are, there's going to be a lot of pain and failure within that. You know, and you go back to that saying of the fear of failure, but really it comes down to pain. And as human beings, we're going to do every and anything that we can to not have to feel pain. Pain is very uncomfortable. We don't want to sit with it. We don't want it to invite it in. We don't want to learn from it. But the wisest people that I know, when it comes to any kind of fear, which I believe that fear really does just stem from this pain of not feeling enough or not feeling wanted or not feeling understood or accepted or heard. So, you know, the wisest people that I know tend to say, okay, pain, I'm going fear, you know, I'm going to allow you to come in, teach me what I need to know, and then travel on to the next person. And I feel like that a lot of times so many people want to use fear as kind of like a hot potato. And instead of sitting with it and allowing for it to you know, evolve and help you grow, they just want to kind of pass it off and pass it on because they don't want to have to deal with it. And so to me, it just comes back to that state of, you know, any kind of change can be uncomfortable. Any kind of pain can be uncomfortable. And fear definitely falls into all of those things. It's you know, they're all the same thing. They're just mass with a ton of different words.
For sure, for sure. That kind of reminds me of the book Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert, and how she talks about the fear of failure and how instead of treating fear like it's not there, she acknowledges it and she almost allows its presence in the room and then asks it to leave once it's done teaching her what it's there to teach her. And I think that's a really valuable way to look at it, and letting that fear run through you and letting it go versus trying to avoid it altogether, because you could be learning a really important lesson in the meantime.
Totally. And I think that that just comes back to the idea that fear is what you make it. You know, it's really not real at the end of the day. It's not this real tangible thing that is like lurking around to like, you know, make your life miserable at all. It really truly is just what you make it. And the more aware that you can be, or that one can be, on how not only really and how in which they react to situations, the more in which they can see those opportunities and hopefully change them so they're actually helping you instead of hindering you. And people do it every day. I was doing it, you know, yesterday, for example. I was negotiating, you know, a deal for a blogger, a client of mine. And, you know, we were kind of going back and forth on all of this stuff. And there was a moment that literally in my, it just kind of went through my head and out my head. But there was a moment that I remember thinking to myself, I just, you know, I don't want to deal with this. I want to pass this on to the manager, or I want to pass this on to the lawyer, so I don't have to get down to this nitty gritty stuff of going back and forth. But really what that should have been telling me is like, I'm getting afraid of there's a part of me that is feeling like I'm not capable enough to close this deal, when really I know that I am, because I've done it before. So whatever thing that's happening right now that's making me feel not enough or not understood or not powerful is really, I'm making something up in my head and I'm telling myself that. And I'm trying to not deal with it by passing it on to somebody else. But really, you know, as soon as that thought went in, it went out, and I went back into, you know, the present moment and figured it out and locked it in, and everything was fine. And so really, it's just kind of reminding yourself that, especially if you've been there before, you can go there again. Mm-hmm. So, you know, really giving yourself that grace and that allowance to see fear as a gift and to really use it as much as it uses you. For the benefit of whatever your goals or your intentions may be.
I like that. Use your fear like it uses you. Such a good reminder. I think that there's this muscle memory that happens when you see a situation that you've overcome in the past and it comes up again. You kind of get this immediate feeling of maybe not being adequate to handle the situation. We have to remind yourself that you are adequate and you've been here before and you can overcome it again. And which kind of leads me to my next question is, I'd love to hear about the switch from working in industry as a publicist to then starting your own business. What was that transition like?
Yeah. So again, you know, with kind of following the fear, there was a time when I was in New York, and I had kind of, you know, I'd really gone up there to do everything that I, at the time that I had set out to do. And I was really kind of hitting a crossroads with like, and anyone who's ever lived in New York will understand this, but you kind of hit a crossroads with that amazing city that you really have to make a decision to dedicate yourself to the city and to the grind of the city and really investing in a life there and building a life there and really start giving back to the community and doing all of those kinds of things, in which we should all be doing as people who are here to serve, or are we going, you know, or am I not going to do that? And I'm going to take this other road. So I had made the decision to move back to Nashville. I had, ended up just through some various networks of friends. I knew that there were going to be some opportunities happening in Nashville just on the growth side, as Nashville was starting to really grow as a city. And so I kind of just took the leap and I did it. Looking back now, of course, I have no regrets. I love New York. It's still my favorite city in the entire world. And luckily for what I do for a living, I get to go back, you know, pretty frequently throughout the year. But I just knew that it wasn't, you know, it wasn't ingrained in my DNA to necessarily live there. You know, I do have friends that live there forever, and it's perfect for them, and it fits exactly what they're meant to be doing, and they're supposed to be there. For me, it wasn't really, I didn't really have that calling. And so I went back to Nashville, and I was able to get a great job at Thomas Nelson, which is now owned by HarperCollins, but they are, you know, a massive publishing house. And I was able to work in-house for them. So I went boutique music PR in New York and then went into in-house publishing PR. And so again, same kind of strategy, same kind of system, just different, you know, different artworks and crafts and, you know, different side to the creative, if you will. And that was really fun. I got to start working in-house with authors, doing a lot of amazing stuff. And I did that for several years until I then, you know, started kind of feeling the itch, the intuition, if you will, to start something. You know, I knew that with my experience in New York and my experience in-house with the publishing side of things, that I was ready to do it. And I just kind of had to take the leap and do it. And so this was, I think, about 4 years ago now, that I decided to leave, you know, my comfortable corporate America job with my 401k and my salary and my insurance and go off on my own. And, it was absolutely terrifying, but I didn't, again, you know, instead of letting that terrifying feeling keep me from doing it, as terrifying as that thought was, what was more terrifying to me was sitting in a cubicle for the next 30 years.
In fluorescent lighting.
Fluorescent lighting. Exactly. There's a lot of fantastic, fantastic creative people that I admire and look up to who have done just that. So it's not that I'm bogging that down. But for me and the way that my brain works, I tend to be very kind of creatively ADD-ish when it comes to, you know, spinning my plates and having a lot going on. And I just knew that from what my dreams were and what I wanted to accomplish and really what I wanted to have done at, say, you know, 30 years old and 35 years old and 40 years old, I always had a very keen awareness of exactly what I wanted to do. I may not have known how I was really going to get there or really, you know, what it was all going to look like, but I knew exactly what I wanted to do. And I knew that staying kind of in that corporate environment was not going to get me there. So as terrifying as it was, and as, you know, terrified as my family was for me to leave this perfect cushiony job that everyone says is the American dream and go off and start on my own with no form of security, what was more terrifying was not doing it. And so, you know, I couldn't essentially, you know, If I continued just to kind of face that fear, I would have probably just stayed in that space of comfort. But if I was going to follow the fear, then I was going to follow that out of that into what I'm doing now. And, you know, luckily with a lot of hard work and just a lot of, you know, great collaboration efforts with business partners and things like that, so far we're 4 years in and it's paid off. And so then from starting my own firm on the PR side, then that has then transferred as well into blogging and then not only my own blogging that kind of happened after that, but then also representing bloggers and kind of being a voice for bloggers and helping them grow their brand, business, and income.
Girl, you are such a girl boss.
Thank you. I think it's important. I mean, you know, there's not a better time in this country, I don't think, and really in the world, if you're given the opportunity for the freedom to do so, to be your own boss. And so, you know, I think it's a very exciting time, and I feed off of that, my personality anyway.
Oh yeah, I definitely feed off of that energy too. Something that you touched on that I really wanted to discuss more was this idea of awareness. And you mentioned that you felt the itch, you were aware that you needed to make a change, and you've always been aware of what you needed, but weren't sure on how to get there. So when did you become aware? Because I really feel like awareness is something that you learn over time, and some people aren't self-aware at all and never really quite get there.
Right. You know, I think for me, I was very, you know, grateful or just lucky to really have that sense of awareness kind of ingrained in me, just because I had a family around me who had always been super keenly aware, super dedicated. You know, I have a lot of, you know, aunts and uncles, you know, have an uncle who went to the Naval Academy, a cousin who went to the Naval Academy, and super, super dedicated, concentrated, focused individuals who were able to become very, very successful in whatever line of work that they did. So I had a lot of fantastic examples around me. But I also grew up when I was super young with, you know, kind of a lower to middle class family who didn't have a lot of money. And so I think just being aware at a young age that, you know, I didn't want to live that way forever, And although my parents were, you know, super hardworking and did the, you know, the best that they could to make ends meet, I saw the struggle in that. And I knew that there were opportunities that went beyond that. And so I think more just being aware of knowing what I didn't want helped me as I got older and really kind of into my schooling and really figuring out what my personality strengths were to really get aware on what I did want. And, you know, kind of being the extroverted social person that I am, I knew that I needed to do something that involved, you know, people and connecting with people and kind of that social aspect. And then how do I fuse those worlds? And so just really, I think more being aware of my strengths as an individual and really kind of how my personality could strengthen a greater sense and not so much of just like, you know, kind of having goals that may not be really realistic. You know, it's like I was never going to try and strive to be like a volleyball player. I'm 5'3" and I'm terrible at sports. So that's not something that I'm really going to focus on. So for me, I always tried to really focus on the things that I, you know, kind of were able to pick up quickly or are really attributed to my personality. And I really do think that I have just the family and the network of people that I was around growing up to thank for that.
Yeah, yeah. Because then you're setting yourself up for success by knowing what you do and don't want. And perhaps you go after something you thought you wanted, and then you learn you don't want it after all. You're aware of that, and then you're kind of able to move on quickly from it. Now, owning your own publicity agency, I assume that that is extremely fulfilling because you're working with small businesses and bloggers, helping them create sustainable brands and product launches and businesses. What has been something that has surprised you most while running your own business?
I think just kind of the constant evolution of everything and really to kind of touch on what you were saying earlier, where, you know, I've never been one to kind of just sit in something that didn't feel right or that wasn't helping me grow or really kind of pushing me towards the direction in which I felt I was being called to do. So I would always just change it. You know, I never really just like, you know, sat in a job for years that I didn't love or, you know, and not to say that I was changing careers every other day by any means, but I was always such a multi-passionate entrepreneur with everything that I wanted to do. There were so many things that I wanted to do and I wanted to learn. So I tried to do as much of it as I could. And then I would pull little strengths from that to kind of combine into one bigger thing. And that's what's kind of allowed me to evolve to where I am today on the business side of things. You know, if a job wasn't working well for me, I would make sure to get out of it what I needed to, and then I would change it. Or, you know, if living in a certain city wasn't the right fit for me anymore, I would move. You know, I never allowed that that just kind of self-deprecative kind of mentality to things of really kind of playing the victim, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Even though if there were times that I felt hopeless or helpless, because we all do, I knew that that was the moment in which I needed to change. And so, kind of with that mentality brought me to where I am today with, you know, blogging and kind of this whole new world of digital marketing and influencer marketing and really getting my feet, you know, just diving headfirst, I guess I should say, into that. I started blogging about 3 years ago when I was pregnant with my first son. I moved to LA because I had met my husband and he was living there and had lived there for 25 years. So I, you know, again, here I am, you know, in a brand new big city. I don't know anyone and I'm pregnant. And like, who wants to hang out with a pregnant girl? You know, no one. You know, there's just like not a lot of fun can be had hanging out with a pregnant girl. So I started to blog as just a way to connect with people and meet people. And from that, what I started finding is, you know, about 12 to 18 months in of just kind of testing my own blogging out, because I think, again, with any entrepreneurial thing that anyone's ever going to do, with any career path everyone's going to take, it's all a test. You know, you have to test out what works well for you or what doesn't work well for you. And, you know, like I was saying earlier with my personality strengths, I might have done something and not have done it very, very well. But at least like that failure in that or not doing that well taught me what I needed to do to change and to tweak. So with blogging, it was no different. I started as like a motherhood blog thing. And it did well. It just wasn't really servicing the greater good, and it wasn't really making as big of an impact as I was intending or planning to. And so then I kind of switched that, and I tried to do more like lifestyle and fashion stuff, but that was just a market that at the time not only was so saturated, but that wasn't really me at the end of the day. It wasn't really as authentically me as I could have been. I mean, you know, I'm a girly girl and I love fashion and beauty as every girly girl does, but it's not, you know, my love of fashion is not something that's like super, super ingrained with me. You know, I'm not a stylist. I don't necessarily even have like the best sense of style in terms of just having kind of that natural creative way of putting pieces of clothing together like so many fantastic bloggers out there do. And so I knew that, again, here I was, you know, testing this and it's not really getting the biggest impact. I'm not really serving my readers to the best that I could. And so then I just kind of went back to the drawing board, and what I really started to figure out was what these bloggers needed the most was tips and tricks and techniques and more kind of insider secrets on how they could become bigger and better and more intentionalized bloggers and what they were trying to do. And so I completely rebranded my blog, and instead of, you know, being this lifestyle mom fashion blogger, I then became a blogger for bloggers. And I just basically fused my world of marketing and PR into my world of blogging and started offering them, you know, a ton of free tips and tricks and how-tos that I share and still share on my blog, juliesolomon.net, pretty much every day. And that's when I saw just a major, you know, 360 spin in just the feedback and really started to cultivate a fantastic community of people there. And that's when I really started serving them the best that I could.
I love that you were able to shift and pivot around based upon how the market was reacting to your content, and that you weren't so emotionally attached to it that you couldn't let it go and kind of let it evolve into something else. You were still a blogger, but you shifted your content and rebranded to best fit your audience and fill the bigger gap in the market. And that's hard to do because we get so emotionally attached to things we create, but sometimes you have to bring it back to the practical basics of, am I fulfilling a need? What makes me different? And how can I best serve a gap in the market?
Yeah, because I mean, really at the end of the day, and this is something that I tell every blogger client that I work with, because now I do, you know, not only traditional PR, but more so I do, you know, blog management, blog consulting. You know, I am the kind of the brand manager for the blogger. And I always tell them this, that at the end of the day, really, the only thing that you should be emotionally attached to is serving others, because at the end of the day, that's what we are all here to do. And especially for women in the blogger space, your blog is finally giving you that voice that you know, it's giving you that avenue and that voice to finally be heard. And if you're not serving others to the best of the ability, then you're not making that connection that you probably originally and truly are intending to make. And at the end of the day, and I always tell every blogger that I ever meet this, if, you know, your blog has nothing to do with you, your Instagram has nothing to do with you, and everything to do with your audience. Now, when I say that, it's not that I'm saying that it has nothing to do with you and you don't need to be authentic and just put out whatever that you think that someone's going to be interested in. I mean, it does have to be authentic and true to your voice, but what you're delivering to them really has nothing to do with you and everything to do with them. And so I even notice with myself and so many other clients of mine now, it's like, in the blogger space, especially the fashion blogger space, it's so easy to get caught up in like that, here's my outfit today, here's my outfit tomorrow, look at this cute scarf, here's this cute sweater I'm wearing. And it's like, you know, for some people, that works really, really well for them. And they have kind of created a brand around that. And that's just kind of like their shtick. And that's what they do. And that is what their audience wants to see from them. But to me, that's so surface. And I know that even those bloggers that do that, they have so much more to offer than just that. And so what I try to do is I try to get down to the root of like, why are they posting those things? Why does this matter to them? You know, why is styling clothes and looking pretty so important to you? You know, let's get down to the root of that. And then once we find the root of that, how can that root of that and that vulnerability of why you're really doing this serve the greater good and serve your audience? And so that's what I mean when really at the end of the day, your social media posts and your blog have nothing to do with you and everything to do with your audience. And the second that bloggers really start to understand that and then tweak their content to really serve their audience is when they see their engagement skyrocket every single time.
Oh, yeah. And I think a lot of times the blogging space can be filled with a lot of ego because it's pictures of ourselves and we talk about what we did and what we wore and how we feel. And it kind of turns into I. And I've experienced it. I know other bloggers have experienced it. Maybe even you've experienced it. And it's a struggle between serving an audience and serving an ego kind of with our own agenda. And when you really are serving an audience, that's when you become influential. Which kind of leads to my next question is, what do you think makes someone influential?
To me, I think that what makes someone long-term influential, again, because I'm all about the turtle of the race, not these, you know, not these influencers that may seem to have just blown up overnight. So what I think really makes someone influential is someone who is able to keenly and intentionally connect with someone else to the point that it makes an impact that goes beyond and greater than what they are.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Making a lasting impression by sharing your life with other people in a meaningful way that can truly connect with someone else really can create immense amount of influence. I have one more question for you, Julie, but before I ask it, I would love for you to share where people can find you online.
Yeah, sure. So my website is the easiest way to find me because through there you're going to find everything else. But that is juliesolomon.net. And then, of course, I'm on Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, Twitter, all the good stuff. Instagram tends to be where I'm most consistent on. And so that is at Jul Solomon, JulSSolomon. And then the juliesolomon.net, of course. And there as well, they'll find all of the great tips and tricks if there's any influencers or bloggers out there that want to know how they can grow their reach and their network and their influence.
Your blog and YouTube videos are so helpful. I first stumbled upon you via Instagram and from there have learned so much from your YouTube videos and blog posts. And I just want to say how inspiring you are and thank you for all the work that you're doing in the blogging and online entrepreneur space. You are such a light, and I am so glad I've gotten the chance to talk with you. So my last question is, what does the laptop lifestyle mean to you?
To me, laptop lifestyle means freedom, and it means entrepreneurship, and it means being able to accomplish anything as long as you have a laptop, really. And that's really the basis of my entire career and so many other entrepreneurs' career out there. And we can literally work on the moon if we have a laptop. And so cultivating a lifestyle around that really brings about a greater sense of self and a life is great.